Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Good morning. It's John Williams here till noon on social media. I'm WGN King John. Later in this hour, we'll visit with the guy that was auctioning off Bob Rosenberg's Chicago Bulls championship rings. Dave, I have not heard, have you, what the set went for?
I have not.
Yeah, they auctioned them off last night. There's only a few sets in existence of all six championship Bulls rings. One of them was from the scorekeeper of those games. He wants the money now, and so how much was he going to get? Years ago, he was offered $400,000 or $450,000 from a person in Japan. The bidding yesterday was around $100,000, but they figured it would ratchet up at the very end. It was going to close at midnight. There were a couple of rules. It could go past midnight, but we'll see what they got for Rosenberg's six championship rings. Somebody asked me, why is he doing all six? And I think the attitude is, you better to sell them as a set rather than piecemeal. Maybe you get, I don't know, $10,000-$15,000 for one, but all six in one spot. That's the real money. So that's what they tried to do. I do not know what they went for. We're going to find out in 30 minutes here on WGN. Just one other note about what we're going to do in the next hour. I hope you can stick around. And that is, we're going to talk to the producers of that Nova special. It's actually two shows. One was called Cat Tales. The other is called Dog Tales. And it's the stories, the tales of cats and dogs. I'm not a cat person. We had a cat when I was a little kid. Hung itself. It's tragic. But we've had dogs. And the stuff, though, that they said about cats, I thought was just as interesting as the things that they said about dogs.
Can I pause you for a second?
Yeah.
What did you just say?
Yeah, my head kind of jerked. Yeah,
I don't want to bring up a bad memory, John,
yeah.
But what did you say?
Were you being serious or were you being facetious again?
I shouldn't have put it that way, but the cat hung itself by accident.
Was it depressed?
Was it one of those cords from the drapes?
Kind of.
Oh, my God.
That's kind of what I... Eesh.
Haven't had cats since.
My heart just dropped.
I'm sorry to drop that all on you. That wasn't appropriate of me. I apologize. Cats, they say meow only to human beings. Now, that might not be entirely true, but in this show, they say cats meow. They don't come up to other cats and go, hey, what's going on? Or they don't even come up to cows and go, hey, would you move over? But they do to humans. Cats meow to humans. They say they know that a meow generates something in human beings that solicits a response.
Often food?
It may be. So the question with both shows, I think this is just so interesting, is does your cat like you because they like you, or does your cat like you because you got the chicken? And it's the same way with dogs, especially with dogs, because you know your cat doesn't really care about you. They just want some food. But dogs, they seem like they kind of like us. So is it, do they like us or do they not? The stuff, though, they said about cats, I just thought was fascinating. Let me give you a couple of details from the show before we get to the interview. Tell me if this makes sense then. So we were just talking about cats and dogs and the differences between them. The producers of this special, or these shows on PBS, the Nova series, are going to join us in the 10 o'clock hour. But they say the cats pretty much only meow to human beings because they know they'll get something they want out of it, right? And they said that if you put a human being in one of those brain scanning devices, a cat's meow will generate the same electrical impulses in our brains as a baby's cry. Because we go, oh, it's the same sort of pitch sometimes, and we human beings know that means a child needs us, we need to help. And a meow, even though we know it's a cat, you're like, oh, it's a wonderful day. So it works that way. Similar emotional response. They said that the cats know it works, even if they don't know why. They're cats. They said that dogs and humans have different muscles than cats, and a dog can raise its eyebrows and move its eyes and the muscles around its eyes better than cats can. So a dog can make a sad face when he's sad.
Or, oh, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have eaten the pillow.
Or that sideways tilt.
Dogs have muscles that better enable them to make faces that humans can relate to. Cats don't have the same musculature. Never thought about that. But, you know, a cat's like, he looks like a cat. And I think that is so interesting. So does the cat have the same emotions as a dog and can't express them? Or does the cat not have and doesn't need the muscles? They'll answer those questions for us. But they say they're incapable of showing the same expressions as dogs. But they did say that, and if you're a cat person, maybe you already know this, that so while your cat can't make a sad face necessarily, the angle of the tilt of its ears will tell you things about what the cat is feeling. Like if the ears are sort of open and facing sort of forward, if they tilt at an angle, like kind of 45 degrees or 30 degrees back, that means something. Maybe it's fearful or angry or something like that.
Yeah, you definitely know when a cat's angry if its ears are all the way down backwards.
I guess that's it, right? Yeah.
And then its eyes usually kind of squint at the same time that that's happening.
They said that a cat is more likely to approach somebody it knows if that person is smiling. And maybe that's obvious, but maybe not, because cats are so distant. But they said cats do pick up on human emotional cues. So if you're smiling, hi, the cat is more likely to sit on your lap than if you have a stern face. And I guess you knew that. The dog is, he's coming. They have no trouble with dogs in this regard.
So is the cat going to let you know when the Amazon delivery guy shows up at your doorstep?
No, he is not.
But the dog will?
The dog's, hey, we got a package. They also said the cats are not derivative of lions and tigers the way dogs are derivative of wolves. The cats, all cats today come from a breed of ancient cats, but they were smaller cats living in trees. And so they're not the tigers and lions the way dogs are wolves. And the thing just goes on and on and on like that. But central to it all is how much do they know us and love us, and yeah, we'll let them answer those questions a little later on. There's a house in Lockport, and they're picking up a different radio station in their walls. They are near a transmitter. They do not have the radios tuned to the station, but in their daughter's walls, the wiring is acting like a speaker and the conduit and the metal in there. This is hard to hear, but I'm going to play two cuts for you. This is from ABC7 the other night. They did a story about it. This is what it sounds like in the daughter's bedroom at night. So you can hear the singing in the background. It's a Christian radio station, so sometimes this is the next cut. They're talking. They've cut the walls out to see if they could, like, there's no phone that dropped in there. There's no radio back there. That's just the walls and the wiring, acting like speakers in their house. If we need to get that for WGN Radio.
If those walls could talk.
But, okay, so is the station broadcasting at too high a power? I mean, is that possible that they're doing something wrong?
They approached the station, and they said, not our job. The FCC said, we can't help you. So the dad is like, sliced out a great big portion of the wall, pulled it out. It didn't do any good. Play number two again, Elif. So they said it happens at night more than during the day, or at least they notice it because that's when their daughter's in the bedroom and she's trying to sleep. She goes to her parents' room because this is happening. So if that was us last night, you'd heard John Weideman saying, over to Kane, Kane back over to Taves, Taves to Kane, which would have been kind of cool. Could pick up Justin Kaufman and Nick DiGilio.
It would be like she's trying to sleep. She's got school in the morning, and she's got the goal horn going off.
Trying to build an audience here, Dave.
I'm all for that, believe me. But, you know.
But I don't know that that's... Has anybody ever experienced anything like that? Wasn't there an episode of Gilligan's Island where Gilligan was...
Yes.
Mouth accidentally turned to a two-way radio or something like that? But I didn't think that actually happened. I didn't think that actually a toaster, your fillings, or the wiring in your wall would act like a radio speaker. But this family in Lockport has had this happen to them. Elif just whispered in my ear, we got them at 11:30. So maybe the dad can hold the phone up to the wall. And if we could just get him to change stations, that's all I'm interested in. I mean, I'm sorry for the inconvenience, but doggone it, I'll take it if we can get it. Lori wanted to say something. Good morning, Lori. You're on WGN.
I had something similar. I'm a widow, and a couple years after my husband died, I woke up one night, and I'm hearing this piercing alarm. It wasn't the smoke alarm. You know, it wasn't the security. I'm trying to figure it out. Go to the living room and focused on the wall that the thermostat was on. And I didn't know if thermostats had alarms, and if I went toward the alarm, it was louder, and if I went away, I didn't know what to do. It's like 2 a.m, so I ended up, I called the heating company, and they said, well, you're under warranty, we'll send them, somebody out, and they could hear the alarm, so, or the noise. So then I decided, I don't know if I want a stranger in my house at 3 a.m. without someone knowing, so I called the sheriff's office and said, just so you know, and they said, yeah, just call us when you're done. So, wow, is that alarm loud? So the guy comes, and at the door he says, wow, is that noise loud? And comes in the living room, and at the time, the living room was totally empty except for a container of stuff and the exercise bike. And he's going to the thermostat back and forth. Yeah, it sounds there, and then he says to me, are there any batteries in that bike? And I went, yeah. And he said, I think the sound is transferring through the aluminum frame to the carpet to the wall. And he asked if he could take the batteries out that had expired, according to the date, like 8 years before. And the sound stopped. And then he
said, so your exercise bike? So the exercise bike was acting as a radio receiver?
It was acting, the battery was humming, and it was acting as as a very loud, and it was going, this is what he thought, it was going, the sound was going through the carpet to the wall, and for some reason, so he said, there's good news and bad news. The good news is there's nothing wrong with your thermostat, and the bad news is that we don't have a warranty on your bike, so I have to charge you $170.
Well, at least your mystery solved. Lori, thanks for the call. I'm sorry about that, but at least that's not a radio station, you know, especially if it's not your favorite radio station. Lori, thanks for the call. Bill Murdoch's our engineer. Hey, Bill, come here for a second. But Barb, jump in there too. Barb, what did you say was picking up a radio signal?
Our oil five gallon capacity space heater in the like mid to late 40s. We lived in a what was very very rural area at the time. It was it was near Maine East High School.
Yeah.
But it was also like half a mile, whatever, from the WJJD tower.
Right. But it was coming through your space heater? Is that what you're telling me?
The Golf Mill.
But it was coming through the space heater, right, Barb?
It would come in through the space heater.
Okay, hold on 1 second. I'm just short of time, and our chief engineer, Bill Murdoch, just walked in. Hi, Bill.
Hi, John. How
does that happen sometimes?
It is common, yeah.
Does our radio station bleed into people's appliances and walls?
We do.
That's awesome. Really, you've heard about this.
Yeah, but we've also been there since 1937.
So then we have a history, yeah.
Yeah, so we typically help people out when they have
this. So the signal's going out there, and the pipes start vibrating, and then they turn into speakers.
Yeah, well, it's almost like you can make an AM radio out of a crystal and a little, you know, cat whisker and stuff like that. So it's real easy to make a very basic AM radio.
Okay.
So it's a grounding issue. So it's different metals.
Really?
And it just needs to be grounded and...
You should come back at 11 o'clock and we put these people on from Lockport because they can't get rid of that one radio station in their walls. Can you believe that?
It's pretty wild.
How about that? Bill Murdoch's our engineer. By the way, I did have all 10 of the collectible McDonald's Beanie Babies with the cardboard cutout display case that they went in the bags.
Yeah.
We're talking Ivy League education right there. Boom.
I got them too. And I think pretty much everybody I know has them.
A friend of mine was collecting them, so I gave him them and the display. Years later, we went to a yard sale at his house, and there they were! It was not Ivy League money. It was next to the ivy on the fence in his backyard. And I think he was looking for about $45 for the whole thing.
Way the Power Rangers. Thought that was going to be my 401k.
This is so sad. Dave and I each had a chance to get in early on Apple, but we said, no, we've got Power Rangers and
right.
Beanie Babies.
I don't We're need set no for life.
Stinking 401k. Short and sweet, concise like a haiku. So we're going to be here on WGN as long as they let us into our 80s.
I had a Cabbage Patch doll.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Well, I wonder if there's any value in that, Mary, today, do you think?
No, she was in pretty bad shape.
That's the thing. So we'd get our kids the Beanie Babies, and I'd say, okay, here you go. Now, some of the kids are keeping them as collectibles, and maybe someday it'll pay for your college, or do you want to play with it? They just opened it up and threw it at each other. You know, they played with them. Dennis, you're on WGN Radio. That's not why you called, though. We were telling the stories about how there's this family in Lockport picking up different radio station in their walls. What happened to you, Dennis? You're on the air.
Well, good morning. When I was growing up in Niles in the 60s, my father had a rather large model railroad in the basement, and we were within sight of the WJJD transmission towers, and we could hear WJJD coming out of the small electric motors in the model railroad locomotives.
Wow. Isn't that crazy? I'm sorry, I've worked in this business. I didn't know this happened that much.
It's also the second mention of WJJD since you started this conversation.
We've now achieved all of their listeners coming not through radios, but through appliances and model railroads. That's funny. Wow. Wow. Dennis, thanks for the phone call.
Thank you, John.
Have a good day. Jim, different topic. You wanted to comment on something that Dave Ennett mentioned. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah, this is about that Ortiz thing. Remember when the steroids broke open, Canseco was the one that did it, just like this guy did it with the Houston Astros. Canseco got a lot of criticism, threats, he was going to be sued and all that kind of stuff, but he broke open the steroid thing.
Yeah.
And if you remember that.
Let's not criticize the people that tell the truth.
As a matter of fact, Canseco is one of the guys who criticized David Ortiz for calling Fires a snitch.
Well, this would be the first time somebody said then Canseco had a good idea there, because he got hit by too many baseballs over the course of his career. He wasn't always considered the brightest bulb on the tree, the sharpest spike in the infield, but doggone it, that does make sense. 949, this is WGN. What is the college dormitory situation like for your kids? I'll tell you why I'm asking after 10 o'clock. Or your grandkids, or maybe you sometime soon. There's an interesting thing happening out there, and it's not all good. College dorms, that's coming up after 10 o'clock. Also in the 10 o'clock hour, we'll talk to that producer of those Nova specials about dogs and cats, how they are the way they are. Lots of texts about that today. Bill Huggins is on a phone line. He is that auctioneer we've been talking to this week from Huggins and Scott Auctions to tell us what happened to the bidding on the 6 championship Bulls rings that were up for bid last night. The auction took all week long. It was supposed to close at midnight. Hi, Bill. Good morning. How are you?
Morning, John. Yes. Well, you know, I mean, actually the bidding, it got up to $180,000. However, it did not meet the consignor's reserve. So the bidding public was not willing to pay what the consignor was hoping to get.
He wasn't going to take 180, and that's as high as it got, so he didn't get anything.
Well, yes, that's
he still
true.
Has the rings, yeah. What was his minimum, do you know? You must.
Yeah, I think it was 300.
Yeah. Dave so had it at four. What did you have it at, Dave?
400.
400. And Grzanich was at 375, I think, somewhere around there. And then Mary was at a million.
Okay.
I may have been the closest on this one.
Yeah, I mean, they've never been offered for sale before, so there was no, you can't say, well, the last 8 times we've sold these 6 rings, they averaged this. So there was nothing to go by. So it was sort of a fact-finding mission, which he found out something, at least that in a national, worldwide public auction. This is what somebody was willing to pay on February 20th, 2020. So.
Right. I mean, there's not a big market established for that, so at least now he has a baseline. Although, I'll bet if that was Scotty's set, or certainly Michael's set, it would have been worth more rather than the scorekeeper's.
Without a doubt. Yeah. Without a doubt, yes. Players' rings always sell for more than front office rings or non-players' rings.
Yeah. In this case, Rosenberg, the scorekeeper, who said he wants the money, and I don't blame him. It's his money. It's his ring. He can do whatever he wants with it. Do you think, by the way, Bill, that if you guys had auctioned them off one at a time, you would have gotten more? So six rings, 180, would you get more than $30,000 a ring?
That's a hard question to answer, only because I thought the sum of the parts, the fact that they were unique with the special case that Jerry Reinsdorf gave to the few people who had all six.
Yeah.
I figured it was one of those things where the whole is greater than the sum of the parts, you know.
Yeah. Didn't happen. But, okay, well, I'm sorry. This is very anticlimactic. We were really excited here. We built up a lot
I would have loved to have told you whoever said a million was a little bit low, you know.
Well, Mary has that kind of money. She just didn't offer it. That's the problem. She's sitting on a...
Well, you know, maybe she's going to earmark that for something else.
Yeah, Beanie Babies. All right, so
there you go.
Well, hey, listen, it's nice to meet you this week, and next time something like this comes up, let's talk again. Huggins and Scott Auctions, Bill Huggins, 180, but not the 300 he wanted as a minimum, so he keeps the rings. Nice to talk to you, Bill.
You got it, John. Hopefully we'll talk soon.
I hope so. I meant to mention this the other day, and I haven't, but speaking of sports, this is the letter that RCN sent to its valuable customers, its valued customers, about the Cubs being on TV. They said, if you are an RCN customer, if that's how you get your television, and that's how you're going to get the Cubs on TV this year. Remember, no Comcast deal yet. If you're a Comcast customer, you still don't have Marquee. You still don't have Cubs baseball coming up. We've got a White Sox baseball game on this radio station tomorrow, 2 o'clock. WGN Radio is the White Sox take on who cares?
The Angels.
So we'll have that on, and it'll sound sunny and warm in Arizona. Meanwhile, the Cubs don't have a deal with Comcast, but they do with RCN. But now RCN, maybe this is what it's going to be like for Comcast, sent a letter out, and it said, "We face dramatic increases in the costs large corporate broadcasters and cable programming networks." Wink, wink, you know what I mean? Charge for their content. These networks continue to charge higher fees for new channel additions and for the same content that you have been receiving for years. We earlier communicated an increase to the video surcharges that became effective in January. We base that increase on a reasonable projected cost for the new Marquee channel. This doesn't say what they upped the charge, but they've already upped the charge from RCN to get ready for Marquee. They continue, "Unfortunately, the pricing set by Marquee was substantially greater than we expected." In boldface now, "because of the gap between the expected and final cost, effective with your March statement, you will see an increase to the sports surcharge of $2.40. To learn more, go to rcn.com. We thank you for being a valued RCN customer." Phew. Zing! So that's just the way it's going with RCN. I said it's probably going to be $5 just because that's what you and I have been reading. And if the previous charge was around $2.50 plus this $2.40, then you're at about $5 a month to get the Cubs. And they're sorry about that, and they're angry about that because of the gap between the expected and final cost. Beginning with your March statement, you'll see an increase to the sports surcharge. You read your bill, an extra $2.40, according to Tom McKay, the general manager of RCN Chicago. Hi, this is John Williams. I have a suggestion for something for you to do, which maybe isn't on your radar if it's a cold February day. And I know that the weather is getting a little warmer this weekend, but we ain't out of the woods yet. And even when it's 40 degrees, it's not like you're going to go out and rake the yard. But we went to the Chicago Botanic Garden last night in Glencoe and went to the orchid show. And I know you think of me as a macho man who wouldn't be too interested in looking at pretty flowers. And maybe you're a truck driver or you're in the Navy and this doesn't sound like fun to you. But I'm telling you, it was really fun. The flowers at this thing are amazing. It's like, how do they do that? They are so detailed. And you'll have a purple or say a peach or white colored petal. And then on that petal is a thin line of red and then dot, 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 dot with little lines. And it looks like you took a computer and mapped the coloration on there. It's so symmetrical and beautiful. And these plants are, there's no other way to describe it, sexy. I mean, the enveloping of the various petals and the things that are sticking out and the things that are going in, they're really exotic. And their colors are just amazing, and the patterns are something else. So you go to this Chicago Botanic Garden like we did last night. The show goes through March, and they'll sell you a beer, a glass of wine, even a specialty cocktail. They have an Asian restaurant there doing kind of stir-fry food and Asian food. You can get a bowl of that. You could make a meal out of it or just walk around with your glass of wine and look at the flowers.
Can you take an orchid home?
Oh, yeah, I just pulled a bunch of them right out of the roots.
No, but do they sell them or, you know, any that they've grown?
It is tempting to just snip one of the things.
don't do that.
Do not do that. I don't know. I didn't see them for sale.
Okay.
I can see you walking around with the orchids that you just yanked out of the pots.
What, me?
Just casually walking around, though.
We're good.
Also, I don't know if you saw, I didn't scoff at you or... You know.
You were totally scoffing at me.
I know you saw, and that's why I wanted to defend myself when you made the Macho Man comment.
Yeah.
Because the thing is, I see you as a very cultured human, and
right.
Being cultured, you can also be macho.
Mm.
So you being self-deprecating in that moment was what I was enjoying.
Thank you for that.
You're welcome. I didn't mean to offend you ever.
It's my producer, Elif. Flowers are really pretty, and it's nice to walk around a place that smells like dirt and soil and moss and just live green plants. I mean, you don't need your coat. It's a little cool in some of the areas, but it's indoors, right? And orchids are kind of, I guess, delicate flowers. I read The Orchid Thief. Oh, my God, what a great book. I came up to one of the ladies working there, and I said, I'd like to see the black orchid, please. And she looked panicked and started going through her notes, and she said, I don't think we have one. I said, because I don't think there is one. And then we had a laugh. But it was really just a nice way to spend 45 minutes. You might spend a half hour, you might spend an hour and a half there. But that's about enough time to do it, and then you go out and get some pizza or whatever it is you want to do. But I'm just suggesting, if you have not done that, to contemplate that. If you can't think of something to do and you want to stretch your legs, go to the Orchid Show at the Chicago Botanic Gardens. And I don't know what it cost you. We're members. I think it's a good reason just to sign up. If you're a member, you get free parking and admission, and it's worth the price of admission. Have a little wine, stroll around. It was positive. And by the way, it was interesting to me how many young couples I saw there. I think there are some 20 and 30-somethings, and they go, I don't know what we're going to do. Thursday night, go do this.
My best friend is a member, and she works about a mile away from there. She goes there for her lunch breaks like 3 days a week, so she's always sending me pictures of whatever they have going on. So I've seen the orchids, just not up close and personal.
These are really beautiful, and don't touch them. But I'm telling you, you just cannot believe the shapes. In fact, I took a bunch of pictures on my phone. I'll post them in a little bit here on at least Twitter. I'm WGN King John on social media, and there I will be posting pictures of flowers. Marita, this is John. You're on WGN. Hi.
Hi, John. I'm calling from my car. I literally just came out of Hauserman's Orchids in Addison. It's on Addison Road and Route 64.
Yeah.
It's like going to Hawaii. It's just spectacular. All these blossoms, all these gorgeous orchids. I have been to the Glencoe Orchid Show, and it is stupendous. But this is like acres of orchids. I highly recommend it.
What does an orchid plant cost?
Well, I spent $35 each on two, but they're not your common phalaenopsis that you find at Trader Joe's. These were Paphiopetalums, and they're going to only bloom once a year. But if you care for them carefully, you don't let water sit in them. You let the water drip through. You only water them when they, like once a week. They're just so rewarding.
That's a good way to put it, rewarding. I mean, to, I can look at these things every day. They're just the shapes, the patterns, the colors. It's just like any, unlike anything you've ever seen. It's amazing.
I know. It's unbelievable.
And by the way, what's the name of that store again? Let's give them one more plug here.
Hauserman's, H-A-U-S-E-R-M-A-N, Hauserman.
Did you read the
Orchid? It's a family-run business, and they've been there for years.
Have you read The Orchid Thief, by the way?
Oh, yes.
It's a great book, isn't it? Crazy people and crazy just information. There's a culture out there that will go to great lengths to collect and steal orchids. Right. It's a very funny book by Susan Orlean.
There are a lot of really rare orchids, yes.
Yeah. Hey, I'm glad you're listening. Thanks for the call. Thanks for helping us out.
All right. You take care.
We've been doing the WGN Radio News story about these carjackings. What was it, a BMW that you guys are reading about in the newsroom there, Jen? Somebody's BMW, they tried to steal it, right?
That was one of them. And then the other one was a Jeep. So, we have, yeah, two this morning. I'm not sure what the details on the BMW one. I'm sorry about that right now.
Elif and I take public transportation. We both ride the Red Line. Both found ourselves on the same car today. Met each other by coincidence at the train stop. We live near each other, as it turns out, and there we were both getting onto the same train car. We've been talking on the show lately about violence, or at least intimidating scenes on the L, on the whole CTA system. While ridership is going down, crime on the L has been going up, and the city and the police are trying to figure out what they're going to do. They're going to have an announcement soon, and they're going to say, we're going to do this new initiative to lower the incidents on the train cars. And perception's reality, even though it's still very safe, we've just been hearing about more bizarre and dangerous cases, and that will depress people's interest in riding. I got an email yesterday from somebody, and they said, boy, I'm not going to get on that system. And I'm not going to sugarcoat it. I mean, there's some bad things out there. But remember, the population that rides the L system, the CTA system, the L and the buses in Chicago, every day is equivalent to the population of Philadelphia. So if we look at how much crime there is in Philadelphia today, then that's reasonable to expect something akin to that, to what would happen on the L system. And if we hear about all of those reports, we go, oh my God, it's insane. I would never ride there, but you'd be happy to go to Philadelphia. So I just think it's hard to keep perspective, but something like that we should keep in mind. Having said that, Elif and I get on the same train car today. And what is it, the next stop a guy got on?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Completely insane. This is a man who was very mentally ill and was dressed slovenly and was hunkered over and was talking very loudly and indiscernibly, but also violently too, was just saying creepy things to people, and not at a distance. He was getting right in their face. As they say, and they did this week, here's what you're supposed to do. Move to the other side of the car. So people were getting up and moving away from them. Not everybody, though, right, Elif? Some people just kept their phones in their laps and kept looking at their phones.
Yeah, but there was one young girl that I
She got up and moved right now.
Yeah.
And she was a small person, and I thought, absolutely. If this guy's physically intimidating to you, and by the way, I'm 6 foot tall, and he was physically intimidating to me. I mean, I don't want to get in a tangle with this guy. And he was maybe 5 feet from the two of us. And then he moved right in between us. And then he started talking to the guy sitting next to Elif, and he started to give him a really hard time. And I think he took a swat at him. Did you see that? He kind of...
He definitely raised his fist.
Yeah.
And just like pounded and this guy, in the
air. This guy is like, how do I know that he's not now going to punch me in the face hard? He's a big dude. So what do you do? You
know? I was actually looking at you like, is he going to save me if something happens?
I've failed you more than one way today, Elif. Sorry.
No, you didn't.
Well, I was really, I mean, it's a thing like, okay, so then what should you and I do in that situation? Should I say, hey, leave her alone? Because, and I would have, but
you can't really do
it
anything.
Hadn't come to that. But I also think that just makes it worse. So I think the only thing for you and I to do is what we did.
yeah,
get up at the next stop and got on the next car. We just moved down one car. And at that stop, when we did that, the whole train stopped because somebody hit the red panic button. And then I guess authorities came and got the guy,
mm-hmm.
pulled him off the train. So our train was delayed, but that was our experience. So then poor Elif gets off the train. I wasn't there. Well, you and I take different stops. I like to walk from Chicago and State. You like to go down to Lake.
Yeah.
Or I get off at Grand. You get off at Lake.
And the only reason for that is that I can get to the Pedway and get into the warmth more quickly than if I were to get off at your stop.
This is just two people trying to go to work in Chicago today. So then what happens to you?
Then I get off and this man says something to me and he gets... He's again, a really big person.
On the street now.
Yeah, and he's homeless, and he asked me for money, and I just kind of, like, ignored him. But he looked me right in the eyes, and I kept walking. And then when I got to the intersection to cross the street, and I was waiting, he came to me again. And I was like, I just ignored you.
You know the drill. You're not getting money out of me.
And especially if you're going to get in my face about it, there's no way I'm going to give you money.
I'm
a generous person otherwise.
Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah?
Well, did you also tell me that he was kind of cornering you, like blocking your path?
I felt cornered because I was waiting for the light to change. And I was going to go to the other side again from where I just came.
Right.
And he left me alone after that.
Yeah. Which is what mostly happens. I mean, almost always. Both of your incidents today happened without any physical altercation to you, but it can be intimidating. And you know, this is one of the sad takeaways for me. So how do we insulate ourselves? How do we safeguard ourselves in situations like that? We keep our nose down and we look the other way. And I hate a society that is now interacting that way rather than being pleasant to each other or exchanging glances or just randomly communicating with people who aren't crazy and violent. But I think we're just like, nope, I'm going to keep my head down. I'm not going to interact. I'm just going to get on the train. I'm going to get on the bus. I'm going to walk down the street. I'm not going to look at or interact with people because that's the safest way to do it. That's how you got to work today. But I think we're all now kind of doing that generally, and that's not a good world to live in. But that's what you got to do when you mm-hmm. walk downtown. We've overstated the case, maybe, or at least I have. But that was your experience today, and it happens too often. The CTA needs to begin to address this situation more regularly. I don't know how they do it, but they ought to do something about it. I don't know what the answer is. I'm not the CTA. I'm not the police. But I do think it's something that they need to spend more time, and if nothing else, for show, right? Because a few incidents where things go bad make everything look bad when it's not all bad. The reverse can be true. A few incidents where you show you're being proactive, where you are on the platforms, where you are intervening more, promote that, and I think it works the same way. You go, hey, what do you know? They're out there. They're not everywhere, but it would make us all feel a little bit safer, or at least like you guys are paying attention. End of the soapbox on that. But that's what's going on out there. This has just been handed to me. Thank you, Elif. Are the orchids the flowers that are edible? And they do sell them at the orchid show. I didn't know that. We didn't see that they were for sale at the Botanic Garden, the orchid show. So I don't know if they're edible, but a couple of you have said that you can buy them there, which would make sense. Just cover them up good as you're taking them to your car because it was cold last night.
I believe the edible flowers are hibiscus.
Don't
so
be
same
eating.
Region, but different flower.
Don't drop a little vinaigrette on the, you know, orchids and start noshing on them. I don't have time for this, maybe, but just I want to read this Facebook post from a friend of ours. Tell me what you think about this. So I'm a few years away, writes Tracy Weiner. She's a one-time producer here and the co-host of a podcast called Apparently. It's a podcast about parenting. If you've got kids and you want to join the little circle of people who have questions and they get answers about parenting, listen to Apparently. And Tracy's one of the co-hosts of that, and so she posted this. I'm a few years away from sending a kid off to college, but out of curiosity, I was looking at housing at the University of Illinois to see what my old dorm looks like these days. In looking through the different dorms, I lived in the six-pack, that's a 3-3 housing area that a lot of the kids have lived at over the years. I'm now seeing every dorm has a community. For instance, my dorm, Snyder Hall, is now substance-free. So everyone lives there, adheres to a substance-free lifestyle. Other dorms were categorized by community, like Leeds, a leadership-focused dorm. There's the WIMSE, which is the STEM dorm. And all of this got me to thinking, when I was in college, I got paired with a roommate who I did not know, who studied something different than I did, listened to different music than I did, and we still managed to have a great time together. One of us did Greek life, the other did not. If college kids are grouped by likenesses and common interests like this, how does this foster diversity and acceptance, or learning to find a common ground with some others who aren't necessarily like you? I feel like this is just wrong on so many levels. Hashtag soapbox. Hashtag sound like an old person. It sounds like a boomer person there, Trace, even though I don't think you are. Am I reading these housing guides wrong? Is this how it works at universities across the country? And if so, do your kids like to be categorized like this? Just curious. I don't know what your reaction to that is. Not everybody has the good fortune of being able to go away to school. I went to Southern Illinois University at Carbondale. I was in a there were four of us living in a dorm room with one bathroom, two beds one side, two beds around the corner on the other side, and a really filthy bathroom in the middle. And we could not have been different. One guy was older. One guy was kind of a hippie, granola, hiking, guitar-playing dude. One guy was a drug dealer, I think. And then me, the Cub Scout. And that was my, you know, welcome to the world experience. I could have gotten in the dorm, I guess, if they'd had it, right? I would have gone with the broadcasters. That would have made me feel a lot more comfortable. But I don't think I'm any worse for having roomed with those guys for a year. And then eventually, my senior year, you know, we all sort of got an apartment in Lewis Park, affectionately known as Loser Park, and we all stayed there for a year. So eventually you do that. But as an introduction, I thought that when Tracy was writing about what the dorms are like, she was going to complain that they're too nice, that we are, you know, fluffing the pillows too much for the kids these days. And I'm wondering what you've seen. The number's 312-981-7200. Jen, I've been fascinated by dog tails and cat tails, these Nova PBS shows that talk about cats and dogs and what they know and what they don't know, where they come from, and do they like you or just the food and treats that you give them. Chris Schmidt's going to talk to us about that in 2 seconds.
Awesome.
Producer of that. You're a big pet person.
I am.
What kind of dog you have?
I have a corgi. She's loud. She flies from couch to couch. No, she's not that loud.
Is she in shape?
She is in shape.
I would imagine your dog would be.
She's only 18 months old, but we might be dealing with a ligament tear, which means cha-ching. Yeah.
Do you have pet insurance?
We do.
That's a good thing, I hear. Yeah, I do not.
I highly recommend it. Yes.
Let's finish our conversation about dorms real quick. Two calls, and then we'll go to our guest. Susan, just jump in there. We're talking about the dorm life and how the kids are categorized by their interest, which made at least one of our friends, Tracy, say, that's not a good idea. They should mix it up more. What did you want to say?
Yeah, my daughter was accepted to a large university, very popular around here, and she went into the healthcare dorm. The problem with the dorms is they are so nice and so opulent. She was put into a dorm that had three rooms to it for two girls, one room for her by herself with a door. The other girl had her door and her room. They had a common area. And the problem is that the door to the hallway had to remain closed as a fire door issue. And so they couldn't prop their doors open and socialize with the kids that are in the hallway like I used to do at my college.
Yeah.
She felt so isolated, and she ended up transferring and went to a different, very similar-sized university, totally different experience.
Isn't that interesting? Boy, you'd think that they would want the doors open. And I've actually been reading some text messages and email from people who go, that's the thing. Kids close the doors. They don't interact in the halls. They've got their phones. And
yeah, she said it's easier for her to go back to her dorm room and sit on her bed and look at social media than it is to gather in the common area. And I asked, you know, oh, when are your roommates across the hall from you moving out? And she goes, oh, I don't know them. I'm like, this is the most social girl around, and she doesn't know people. And I just felt that the niceness of the dorms and the closed door policies that they instill, she just didn't like it. And I also heard from a lot of parents that said that if the kids were not involved in the grade system, they had absolutely nothing to do on the weekends, and they were trying to find things to do. So she transferred, and now she's very happy, and I'm on my way to visit her.
Have a nice visit, Susan. Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
There's nothing more fun than connecting with your kid on a situation like that, you know, on a weekend. Bill, real quick, jump in there. Bill, you're on WGN.
Hey, one kid out of college, three in college, and it's completely different from when I went to school. When I went to school, which was the early 80s, Ball State, you just went to school, and nobody thought, I mean, the food was worse. Nobody thought about the details, you know. Yeah. And now, you know, they micromanage so many of the details to accommodate the kids. I also think the kids today have a lot more stuff coming at them than I did. So maybe they don't need all that diversity experience. I mean, maybe they're getting the same volume of diversity experience that I was getting by being exposed to a bunch of different lifestyles and cultures. Maybe they're getting it on their phone anyway.
But the creature comforts are nicer, aren't they? I mean, it sounds like...
Oh, my God. I've warned all four of my kids, it'll be a decade before you live this nice again. Once you graduate from college,
that's a good point,
and you start having to pay your own rent, it'll be about 10 years before you get back up to this level. So enjoy it while it's there. It'll be a while before you get the quartz countertops that they have in their dorms now.
That is amazing. That is amazing. I got to go, Bill. Thanks for the call.
All right.
Have a good day. Wow. Chris Schmidt's on a phone line. Chris is the person we've been talking about, the co-executive producer of Nova and Dog Tales and Cat Tales. Hi, Chris. You're on WGN. Good morning. How are you?
Hi, how are you? Now I'm all interested in talking about what it was like when I was in college in Chicago. So, but I guess that topic has passed.
Maybe not. Where'd you go to school?
I went to Northwestern, and I went to graduate school at the University of Chicago. I grew up in Deerfield.
I think that having a Spartan college life, you know, like okay food but not great food, kind of a lumpy bed, not a quartz countertop, I think that's a good thing. I don't know what it was like at Northwestern for you, but it wasn't very fancy at Carbondale.
Yeah, no, it was lumpy bed and not very good food. I mean, I loved being in college there, but the creature comforts were not there at all.
And I also see these sort of, what do they call them, snowplow parents, or whatever you call the ones that are pushing all of the things out of the way. I can see those parents being very proactive about making sure they get the food they want and they need and stuff like that.
Yeah, it was different back in my day.
Hey, so now you're an executive producer at Nova, is that right?
That's right.
Well done, sir. And Dog Tales and Cat Tales, is that something that Nova does regularly, or was this just a couple of one-offs?
No, you know, Nova is a pretty eclectic program. We cover everything from, you know, who built the pyramids to where do black holes come from. So we're kind of all over the place. We do, from time to time, some natural history and animal programs. We have a film coming out later this year called Eagle Power about eagles, which is pretty amazing.
Yeah.
So it's not unusual, but, you know, we kind of mix it up all the time.
I thought that the at least one thing that hooked me into the dog one, and I'm not a cat person, but I thought the cat show was just as fascinating, was, you know, what do they know about you? What's their relationship like with you? Do they like you, or do they just like food?
Yeah.
That drew a lot of us in.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's the big question. I mean, that just to refer back to that, there was the film depicted an experiment where trainers had taught dogs to that when they saw a red toy, let's say, they would expect to get a treat next, and when they saw a blue toy, they would expect to get praise next. And then these dogs were trained to be able to lie still in an MRI, which I think a lot of humans could use that training.
Yeah.
And then they would show them the different toys, and they would measure the blood flow in the brain to try to gauge how powerfully the dog was anticipating the next thing. And they found, to their surprise, that dogs anticipate or look forward to praise as much or even more than food, which I think is kind of mind-blowing. And that sort of indicates that the dogs are really attached to us and they really want to have that connection.
We were talking about, what does the dog think when you leave? Do they know that you're coming back? One of my listeners sent in and said, dogs have no sense of time. 5 minutes is 5 hours to them. I don't know if you guys know anything about that, but when we leave for the day, Brenda and I will turn to Daisy and say, we'll be back. We're good.
Yeah.
Can you comment on that at all?
Well, we didn't cover that in the film, but I know from my own dogs that they, I don't know if they have a sense of time, but they, something ticks off in them when a time of day comes around that they expect, you know, whether it's food time or somebody coming home time. You know, they may not be tracking time as they go, but clearly for some dogs there's a moment where they suddenly realize, like, oh, it's food time, and who knows what triggers that.
I think that they also just key on certain things, right? So they don't understand English, but if they see Brenda grabbing her purse and me grabbing my coat, I think they kind of know this drill. Some of us think that if we pull a suitcase out, they look really forlorn because however limited that experience is, they know this is going to be something different, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And they clearly know words. I mean, Nova did a program several years ago about a dog named Chaser. And Chaser was a dog that had learned over 1,000 words. And the way that that worked was that the trainer would say, you know, unicorn. And the dog would go to a huge pile of stuffed toys and would grab the unicorn and bring it out. So this is an incredibly smart dog. Recently passed away, and they clearly understand that that words have meaning. So, you know, I mean, most pet owners know if you say to your dog walk or eat, they get excited, right? They know what that means on some level.
Did you guys say in the Dog Tales Nova special, we're visiting with Chris Schmidt, Northwestern grad, Deerfield kid, is that right?
Yep.
Co-executive producer of the Nova series or shows Dog Tales and Cat Tales. Did you say that dogs are derivative of wolves and that wolves are as smart as our domesticated dogs?
Well, that's what this this group in Austria that had hand-raised wolves alongside of dogs, and then over their lives have put them through various cognitive tests and so forth, and they discovered that wolves are as smarter or smarter than dogs if measured by how well they understand cooperative behavior and things like that. But they're less interested in people than dogs. And to me, one of the most mind-blowing stories in that film was the last one about Callie Truelove, who's a young woman who has a condition called Williams syndrome.
Oh, wait a minute. Hold on a second. I know this story. I'm so glad you're bringing this up. I wanted to get to it. Let me take a break, finish that, and then let's go on to cats. Maybe you've got a question or comment, too. 312-981-7200. We're talking to the executive producer of Nova's Dog Tales and Cat Tales on WGN. 1 hour from now, where will you be? 11:46. We'll do our Bright Side segment. You'll call in, tell me some good news in your world while you're smiling. We'll all smile. It'll be a group hug on the radio, and it works every single time. Chris Schmidt, co-executive producer of Nova's Dog Tales and Cat Tales. Did you see this on Channel 11? Fascinating piece. It's two shows, and we've been talking with him about wolves and dogs. You said that they're equally intelligent, but wolves are less interested in making humans happy or interacting, Chris. Is that what you were saying?
Yeah, that's what research in Austria has shown. And there's a fascinating, one of the most fascinating parts of the story to me is that, interestingly, wolves, the dog evolution from wolf seems to have happened several times. And the dogs we know today is only one of those. The other ones have disappeared. But the current dog that we know seems to share something really unusual with people who suffer from a disorder called Williams syndrome in the United States or in the world. And Williams syndrome is basically 30 genes that have been altered. And it leads to some challenges in life. But it also, there are three of those 30 genes that seem to create a behavior pattern in people whereas people who have Williams syndrome are extremely friendly, extremely optimistic, extremely loving, you know, just people to the 10th degree. And it turns out that those same three genes in wolves and dogs have undergone the same change. And this is a very recent discovery, and it suggests that some of dogs' affinity for people may be related to those three genes that were modified from their wolf ancestors.
Wow.
I think that's just amazing.
Isn't it, though? So, I'm sorry, are you suggesting that domesticated dogs have that genetic trait, wolves don't have that genetic
trait? Exactly, exactly. Those three genes, the three genes that were identified in the 30 genes that changed with people who have Williams syndrome, and it's right there in dogs.
Well, you all interview this woman, or we see her, and she is walking about her house, and she's so cheerful and happy, and I only mean this in the context in which we're talking now. She's like a happy dog. She's very engaged and cheerful the way your pet might be, but she's this lovely woman.
You just imagine, she talks about how much she loves people. You can see she's extremely warm, she's extremely open.
Yes.
You almost imagine that that's what dogs are thinking, right? Like, I love you, I love people.
Yeah. I think it makes them both a little vulnerable, especially a human version of that. It, in a reverse way, maybe reminds me a little of that Temple Grandin, the woman who was autistic and was able to teach us a lot about how cows think, for instance.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Well, yes, totally different situation, but I take your point.
So talk about cats then a little bit. You've told us about dogs, and maybe they like us even more than food. They're very bright and engaging. What's the difference from cats and dogs?
Well, it's interesting because the story of domestication of dogs is quite interesting and complex in terms of the number of times. It seems that in the distant past, anytime wolves started to hang around people, a transformation began to happen that was made them more dog-like. And their skulls and so forth from around Europe and Asia from 30 or 40,000 years ago that show this transformation, but that aren't related to modern-day dogs. The cat domestication story, in some sense, is much simpler, and that cats, in fact, have not moved very far away from their wild, their wild cat ancestors. And the domestic cat today is related to a small wild cat that doesn't look very different from today's pets. They have a little bit longer legs and so on. So the cat story is a really simple story in a certain sense, and maybe that's why cats seem sometimes a little bit more aloof or independent than dogs do. They just haven't moved that far off the bench from where they started.
They haven't had to adapt like wolves
did.
Yeah,
I think so. And also, cats are solitary hunters. Wolves are pack hunters. So they already have this kind of social glue, you know, that keeps them together, that probably gives them a little bit of an edge when it comes to learning to work with or live with groups of humans.
Chris Schmidt from Nova's on a phone. We're talking about cattails now. But you described a moment ago how dogs maybe like us more than the food we give them. What's cats? Do they love us, or do they just love us for the food?
You know, I think the jury's still out on that. There's some indication that they're attached to us as well, but it's not as evident or as strong. And I thought one of the things that was interesting in the Cattails film was a discussion about how we think dogs are so emotionally, we can relate to them emotionally because they make all these great faces, you know, like guilt and sadness and, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah.
And cats just don't actually have the muscles in their face
right.
to make those expressions. And so we don't really know what they're thinking.
Think about this. I mean, I thought that was one of the most fascinating things in either episode. And I mentioned this earlier before you came on, Chris. Dogs have the musculature to show more emotion in their eyes and face. Cats don't. So while dogs really might emote a little, we can't know, based on their expression, what a cat is thinking or feeling.
That's exactly right. And I think that kind of leads to that sense that they're so inscrutable. And then there's so many variations in the way cats behave. You know, there are house cats, there are outdoor cats, there are cats that just have all these very different personalities. But at the end of the film, we do show a woman who has actually trained cats to perform in the same way you would expect, like, a trained dog to perform. And she travels around with this show of cats that do, you know, kind of jump through hoops and walk around on rolling balls and things like that, which seems so odd to anybody who encounters cats or knows cats. I think I
saw that in Chicago, actually.
No kidding, really?
Yeah.
And pretty fun, pretty funny, I guess. Huh?
It's, well, the cats still don't fully engage. They don't still listen to everything they say, but there were a lot of tricks, and they're all motivated by food.
And well, I can tell you, in filming the two programs, so you'll notice that that in the dog show, you'll see these shots of dogs in a white background and a white studio. And from the director of the film, I can tell you that the cats, doing that with the cats was really hard, that the cats just would not cooperate.
John, if I tell my dog to get a toy by name, like Duck or Girl, she will bring that specific toy. I guess you've seen plenty of evidence of that. The dogs can be that specific. I don't know if cats can be trained or are show that much intelligence.
Well, I don't know. One of the things that's behind that, I think, is that dogs are one of the few animals that can follow the pointing test. So, in other words, if you point at a cup with food under it, the dog will follow where you're pointing and go to what you're pointing at. And that's a very unusual and sophisticated behavior. Even many primates can't make that connection. So there's something about dogs kind of intuiting what we're interested in. And, I mean, good luck pointing at something and having a cat look at it and go towards it. I just say good luck to you.
I'm also interested in you all doing another episode, and I don't know what it'll be called, but the thrust of it will be interspecies interaction, the dog that befriends a raccoon or something like that.
Right. We actually had, there was a bit of that in the dog show, but we had to cut for time because we have to, you know, make the film 50 minutes long. But there was a little bit about how dog, and it came out of the story about Callie Truelove and her dog Doodle Dandy, which showed how this same affinity for humans dogs express in affinity towards all kinds of other animals. You know, anybody who has a dog and a cat at home, it's not, once the cat is used to the dog, it's not that unusual to see the dog snuggling up to the cat, or, you know, I think a bird or any number of other animals. So dogs just seem to really like other living creatures until they want to bite their heads off, you know, but that's a dog.
But it's also kind of makes me think about that genetic trait they have that makes them very sociable, unlike cats and too many people.
But, you know, on the other hand, like, you know, I had until recently a Jack Russell who lived a ripe old age, and that dog was quite attached to me and my family, but absolutely not willing to let anybody else come near us, you know. So there is this still that kind of wolfish attribute in dogs that you can bring out. Sometimes it's really near the surface, but I think most dogs have it in a way that if they're provoked in a way that kind of they don't like, that wild side will come out.
Caller said their dog learned Spanish, or the dog they got speaks Spanish. I guess that makes sense, right?
Yeah, although, you know, you always have to wonder, is it the word? Is it the tone of voice? What are they really, what is that little package that they're taking in?
Yeah.
And you never know. You know, the person who called in, they may be so enthusiastic in speaking Spanish to the dog, the dog's responding to that, and it looks like the dog understands Spanish.
Ask him if dogs can count.
There is some indication that dogs have a number sense, and lots of animals do, but birds are better at counting than dogs, interestingly.
I got to go. Chris Schmidt is the co-executive producer of the Nova shows Dog Tales and Cat Tales. I presume they rerun these, right, Chris? I can still see them.
They're streaming. You can watch them on the PBS app, or you can watch them on pbs.org/Nova, our website. They will rerun, but really we want people to watch them through the streaming platforms, and then in that case, they're available all the time.
Congratulations. Thanks for coming on.
Okay, thanks very much.
This is WGN. Good morning, it's John Williams. What a lovely day, huh? Our Bright Side Live segment, your chance to call in, tell us some good news in your world. We'll all feel good if you're listening at 11:40. We might not right now. I suppose it's probably not smart to take on the Urlachers. One's a Hall of Fame linebacker, and the other one looks like he's not somebody to be trifled with, but if Casey Urlacher really is guilty of running some offshore betting ring as the mayor of Mettawa, Illinois, you dopes. Doggone it. Are there any stand-up politicians out there in this state? I'm thinking about that for a particular reason, by the way. I mean, you look at the Chicago Tribune today, and they also have this story about Joe Berrios' son-in-law. Joe Berrios, the former Cook County assessor, he's got a son-in-law, young man married to his daughter, and she's politically connected. They're all politically connected. And he was parking cars near us, Elif, over by Wrigley Field. he had a contract with these schools, and they said you could use the parking lots of the schools and park cars there. You take money for using our big parking spaces. You get to keep the money, but you got to pay us a lot of money for the use of the parking spaces. So the school doesn't run it. They get a lot of money. He gets to make some money, too. Everybody wins. Problem was with people not driving to games as much anymore. They use Uber and Lyft and whatever, the L. The business has been off, and so he said, you know what, I don't want to do this anymore. So I'm not going to pay you, what was it, $30,000 a month or whatever the fee was. But they are suing him because they said, yeah, but you're still parking cars there. So this is the allegation, this is the lawsuit. And they say, you owe us $336,000 for the last few years where you're still parking cars in the schools. You dopes. It reminds me of what Austin Berg said in The Mincing Rascals. Austin Berg of the Illinois Policy Institute. So he's one of the regulars in this panel discussion we do Thursdays. We drop The Mincing Rascals Thursdays, usually around 5. We talk about the local scene, the state scene, the national scene. Some really smart people in there are Steve Bertrand, Justin Kaufman from WGN Radio, and then Eric Zorn, the Tribune columnist, a woman named Heather Sharone from the Daily Line, a great subscription news service in Chicago, and also a free version of that. And this Austin Berg guy, who writes for the Illinois Policy Institute. Maybe a little too wonky for you, but actually very interesting things there, and you can get it for free or you can pay more for it. But he told us that Illinois leads the nation in public corruption convictions. This number was stunning to me, and I'm just looking at his report about this now. They actually quote WLS-TV. New figures from a WLS-TV report found Illinois has tallied 891 public corruption convictions since 2000, more than any other state. We are number one in convicting people of public corruption charges in the entire nation. Now, maybe we have super good, you know, prosecutors, or maybe we're just more corrupt. Maybe a little of each. They write, this does not include the guilty plea filed January 28th by former state senator Martin Sandoval for bribery and tax fraud. So, figure 892 or more. No other state has seen four of its past 10 governors go to prison. Governor J.B. Pritzker's removal of toilets from a Chicago mansion to save $331,000 in property taxes is also the subject of a federal probe. So go Illinois. By the way, speaking of the gang, I'll play for you a couple clips from the last Mincing Rascals podcast. I want to start with, this is what Eric Zorn said. You can hear the whole thing. It runs about 50 minutes this week. It's a pretty good one because we spent some time talking about Blago. We haven't on this show much today. Lord knows we did yesterday and the day before. But this is Eric Zorn making a very good point, just reminding us how that thing went down. You remember that Rod Blagojevich shook down a children's hospital for donations to his campaign. And so say what you want about him coming out, reunited with his family, trying to ingratiate himself to all of us. But remember this, says Zorn.
I want to review the bidding a little bit on this children's hospital story. And what happened was there was $8 million of money that was earmarked by the state to handle Medicaid, supplement Medicaid payments for doctors who were seeing poor children. And there were places in the state where poor kids were not getting medical care because the doctors couldn't afford to see them, and they were flooding emergency rooms at places like Children's Memorial. So the state had okayed this $8 million. And Blagojevich, hearing about this, was holding this money back and had told his people that he wanted to get $50,000, and I guess then they lowered it to $25,000 from Patrick Magoon, I think his name is, who's CEO. Not just he was a CEO of Children's Hospital, but he was also head of this network of other healthcare providers from other hospitals that dealt with this problem. And he was holding his money back. And at one point in the conversation, they say like, "Well, we haven't given this money out yet, right?" And they say, "No." He goes, "And we could hold it back for budget reasons, right?" And they go, "Yeah." He goes, "That's good to know."
So sounds like the Ukraine aid.
So there are some real parallels to this. This is a guy who was willing to withhold this money from poor children, their health care, in order to get a campaign donation. And I don't think that that's just close to the line.
I suggested that maybe it's hard for politicians in Illinois to know what's a legitimate campaign contribution and the expectation that you'll do something for me down the road and what's breaking the law. Zorn said this was not even close to not knowing what the right thing to do was. So Austin Berg says, well, then how come it is that we keep putting our governors in jail and the politicians just line up to continue to break the law? And what do we even do about that? And he had, I think, a really interesting thing to say. Mayor Lightfoot promising to revitalize the South and West Side. Joe Donlan goes to Pullman to see how the money is being spent. That's WGN-TV Investigates Monday at 9:11:19. I was just sampling a few of the pieces from our latest Mincing Rascals podcast. Often we broadcast it on Saturdays, the Mincing Rascals, but I'm not going to be on Saturday, so I thought I'd just take a minute here to sort of give you a sample of what we're doing on the podcast this week. And it really ties in nicely to what we've been talking about, Blago getting out, some of these corruption cases. And Eric Zorn reminded you how really awful it is the way Blago shook down that children's hospital and kept money coming for the aid to kids who don't have money in their families. So Austin Berg says that jailing Blago actually doesn't seem to stem the tide.
He is returning to an Illinois that is as corrupt as when he left it because of people like him being used as not necessarily a scapegoat, but a symbol of we're rooting out corruption because the governor's in jail. Right after he was impeached and indicted, the Illinois Reform Commission, this group of, you know, good government folks appointed by Quinn, traveled the state for 100 days, heard different ideas about anti-corruption reform in Illinois. Section 4 of their report, you can look it up online, talks about structural reforms we need to stop corruption and have greater efficiency in Illinois government. 3 key points. 1, fair maps. 2, term limits for legislative leaders. 3, less autocratic control in the leadership of the House and Senate. Madigan's House hasn't done any of those 3 things, and the current governor who gave a budget address right after Blago was let out is not asking him to. So until that happens, we're just going to have more Blagojeviches. We're still the most corrupt state in the nation, even though we have his story.
What an interesting point. That's Austin Berg from the Illinois Policy Institute. Part of the Mincing Rascals, it's free. You can listen to wherever your finer podcasts are sold or distributed. By the way, Justin Kaufman is one of the Mincing Rascals. You hear him in the evenings here on WGN. Sorry you weren't on the mix. You'll be there next Thursday. But how about that, Justin?
Yeah, well, Austin, he makes such a great point, right? And we've talked about fair maps, and we've talked about term limits and everything in between. I mean, to think about that, it has been 8 years since he went to prison, and all the same things that sent him there are still in play. It's a great point.
900 corruption convictions since 2000 in Illinois alone. And that's the ones that have been caught and convicted. Who knows how many Urlachers there are out there doing stupid stuff. Come on, you guys. Don't do that stuff, please. Come on now.
And John, if there's no deterrent, if you're absolutely right, Judge Zagel gave the former governor, disgraced governor, 14 years. And we saw not just this president, but a lot of critics say, you know what, and including some of the Mincing Rascals, who said, you know what, it's just too much.
Yeah.
That it was an excessive sentence.
I was one of them.
So what is that? Yeah, but so what does that say? The idea that if it's excessive and everyone was like, it's too much at 14 years, but there's still been all of these cases after the fact. It's not a deterrent. I mean, it's not something that is stopping people from deciding to be corrupt or to try and get some personal value out of representing the taxpayers.
Right. So if jailing them doesn't work, then we just need to have some systemic changes. And that's what Austin was saying. Okay, so let's say that you can't be the Speaker of the House in the state of Illinois for more than 2 terms, or that if you leave government, you can't go work for a firm that does business with the government or vice versa. And there's all of those things that they could do. They've done none of them. You're asking the people to police themselves, and they just won't do it. So there we are.
Yeah, and that's where we're at. And I think systemic is the problem with corruption in this case is that somewhere along the line, someone created a blueprint or a format on how to make cash off of being elected representative or someone who serves as a public servant. And somewhere there was someone did it for a long time and probably didn't get caught. Now they're like, They teach it from generation to generation.
And it's not just the governors. I mean, it's all the way down to these little townships you never heard of, guys taking money for all kinds of stupid stuff.
Yeah.
And sometimes not that much money. Hey, listen, so that's the Mincing Rascals. I was going to play, but I won't hear. Maybe I will later on. Maybe I won't. But the conversation the gang had about Elizabeth Warren and Michael Bloomberg fighting each other at the Democratic debate, I hadn't heard all of that until the Rascals got into it. Oh, my Lord, did Bloomberg take a beating. And oh, my word, did he behave badly. He did not have answers to questions he needed to have answers to. So that's all on the Rascals. Hey, how was Ozzie Guillen on your show last night?
He was great. He and his son, Ozzie Jr., came on, talked about a podcast they're doing for La Vida Baseball, but also talked about, spring training. He misses it. But also, we were talking about the cheating scandal and the Houston Astros, and he says in the piece, and you can find it on WGN Radio, that this is way worse than the PED scandal 15 years ago, because that was all about the individual, and this is about the team. And it's just interesting. It was an interesting conversation about Latino baseball players, about him, about how bitter he is about not being a manager anymore, and also just about, he said at one point, he's like, in baseball, to be a manager, you everyone tells you to be honest, or in life, and he said that's the exact opposite. You can't be honest. You can't be honest with the media. You can't be honest with your players, because in this day and age, people just get offended so quick, and it's something that, yeah, this is interesting to hear a manager talk that way, because anyone in leadership, they say, you got to be honest, you got to be transparent. The best way to do is just go forward, and he's saying that's the exact opposite. Very interesting.
Ozzie Guillen, is he still in the national broadcast booth or the local broadcast booth?
He does the local. He does the postgame for the White Sox broadcasts, and I think pre and post. But he's such an interesting character, and a guy who also gets very, what he got mad about? Where he got mad about the fact that people don't recognize that he's a Chicagoan. He spent his entire life here. He's more a Chicagoan than he is a Venezuelan or at where he's from.
Yeah.
And people think he's from Miami or whatever. No, he lives here. He's lived here. He's lived most of his professional life here. And he always gets mad when people are like, oh, you're back. He's like, I never left.
Justin Kaufman, so with Ozzie Guillen last night, WGNradio.com. Click on the shows, and there's the podcast of that baseball conversation. My lines have lit up, though, with what you were saying about corruption in Illinois. Andy, you're on WGN. What did you want to say? Hi.
Well, I wanted to say that regarding people who think that Blagojevich got off easy after his 7 years, the listeners should be reminded that Denny Hastert, the Speaker of the House of the United States, was convicted of child molesting, and he only served 13 months of a 15-month sentence for molesting young boys.
Yeah, and that's a criminal charge. We had this argument on the show the other night, just about so many people call in and say, well, murderers and thieves and others don't get as much time as Blagojevich. I think it's really hard, and it gets apples and oranges when you start talking about criminal charges versus public corruption charges.
Well, because if you kill somebody, that's horrible, and you should pay a serious price for that. Nobody got injured, quote-unquote, by what Blago did, but it affected many millions of people. So how do you gauge a million slights versus one really bad cut, right?
Yeah. The Denny Hastert stuff, which is just awful, but the Denny Hastert stuff, too, you could make an argument, obviously there's corruption involved because, he was a authoritarian figure. He was a wrestling coach. He was a teacher.
Yeah.
And to be able to, that's a betrayal of the public trust as much as public corruption. But yeah, I don't know the instances, and I don't think it was child molestation he went to jail for. I think it was bank fraud. I think at the end of the day,
because it was moving of the money.
Yeah, he was moving money around that he wasn't supposed to be. I'd have to check that. I don't know off the top of my head.
That's an interesting point. Thanks for the phone call, though. I appreciate you at least recollecting that, Andy. And Justin, we'll listen for you. Are you on tonight then, or you got hockey in the way?
Blackhawks tonight. Blackhawks are back on the ice, which is great. I'll be back on Monday.
They got to win this game, and Justin is always good when he's on evenings on WGN. Thanks, man.
Thank you.
One of the Mincing Rascals. You can catch our podcast, too. This is John Williams. How did you describe Elizabeth Warren's performance at that Democratic debate the other night? Some people said it was, I think, strong is the word you used. And I wouldn't argue that. And they also said, holy cow, how did Michael Bloomberg not see some of those things coming that he needed to address? And I didn't watch the debate in real time, but I went back and checked some of it out after the Rascals were talking about it. And so just to give you an example, this is the last clip I'll play. You can hear the whole podcast in its entirety just wherever you get your podcast. Look for Mincing Rascals. The president is in Nevada, and everybody's getting ready for the next round of caucuses and primaries. But this is what the Rascals were saying about Elizabeth Warren and Michael Bloomberg.
His response to Elizabeth Warren's questions about the NDAs and the women who have sued him for sexual harassment.
2 weeks ago, we were awarded, we were voted the most the best place to work, second best place in America. If that doesn't say something about our employees and how happy they are, I don't know what does.
And I hope you heard what his defense was. I've been nice to some women.
I mean, how did he not know that was coming?
Help me out. Did they sue him or did they sue his business?
Both.
Okay.
Yeah.
And his answer was excruciatingly bad.
I like some women, and
well, right. not even the content of the answer, the tone and manner in which he answered it.
So, Mr. Mayor, are you willing to release all of those women from those non-disclosure agreements so we can hear their side of the story?
We have a very few non-disclosure agreements.
How many is that?
Let me finish.
How many is that?
None of them accuse me of doing anything other than maybe they didn't like the joke I told. And let me put, there's agreements between two parties that wanted to keep it quiet, and that's up to them. They signed those agreements, and we'll live with it.
So wait, when you say it is up to, I just want to be clear. Some is how many? And when you say they signed them and they wanted them, if they wish now to speak out and tell their side of the story about what it is they allege, that's now okay with you? You're releasing them on television tonight?
Senator, no.
Is that right?
They decided when they made an agreement that they wanted to keep it quiet for everybody's interest.
The thing that dismays me a little bit is that this guy has expressed a willingness to spend billions and billions of dollars to help elect a Democrat. And all of them up there just, threw crap on him all night. And I can imagine him saying, like, you know what?
I don't need this.
I'm going back to New York. I'm keeping my billions of dollars. I'm going to spend them on trying to get big soda.
He did have a good line about Bernie Sanders, the only socialist.
So the gang sort of rapping a little bit about what happened with Elizabeth Warren and Bloomberg. Fascinating stuff on the Mincing Rascals. Fascinating stuff to me is what happened in Lockport. I guess this has been going on for years now. Our chief engineer here at WGN Radio is a guy named Bill Murdoch. You've heard his name a few times. He travels with us and we go to remotes. We were in Mexico, for instance, and Bill's always making sure everything runs smoothly here. You heard that story about this family in Lockport. They're picking up another radio station in their daughter's wall. And I thought maybe somebody dropped a cell phone there or there was a radio in there or something.
Yep.
But no.
Yeah, it's not uncommon. If you've got enough RF energy in the air and you've got dissimilar metals and you've got some galvanic action happening, you can receive things.
So, what was that, Elif?
What language are you speaking,
Bill? I was just going to say, I'll interpret.
Galvanic.
So here's what the family is hearing in their walls. Can we play the first one, Elif, and then the second one? So a lot of static noise there, but you can hear music in the background. Sometimes the radio station they're hearing plays music. It's a Christian station in town. And sometimes they're talking. That is really discernible.
Yep.
The father of that girl, it's her bedroom, it's their house, is Richard Smith. Hey, Richard, you're on WGN Radio. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. How are you? Thanks for calling.
How long has this been going on, Richard?
Holy smokes, 6 years, roundabout.
How loud
really
does it get?
Really hit or miss.
How loud does it get?
So there are some nights where it's woken me out of a sound sleep.
That's crazy.
That's no fun at all.
That would be spooky.
Yeah.
Were you guys like thinking, I don't know if you thought maybe that it's either your daughter's imagination or the house is haunted, but did it kind of freak you out at first?
Yeah, it was how we first discovered it. I think was the strangest part where our daughter woke up the next morning and said, I heard voices last night. And my wife and I looked at each other like, what? And then there was one night where we put her to bed and we heard it and we looked at each other and just said, what was that? And then we kind of just started on the investigation about what it was. At first, it wasn't super discernible. It was a little muffled, but then one night it came through so strong and so clear, and we heard AM 1160. And I was like, oh, it's a radio station. It's not just voices. So.
And so did you open up the wall to see what was in there?
We did. So we tried, you know, many things for like a long time. And then when we consulted with an engineer from the actual radio station, he said, we have to look at, you know, the electrical wiring in the wall. And we have to look at, you know, if there's anything that we can identify that's actually acting as a speaker, because we couldn't figure out how are we actually hearing this. If, like you guys said, you know, did someone drop an old radio in the wall or leave it during construction? And I'm like, well, I don't think batteries would last 6 years. But so then we we tore the wall open and just took a look at the conduit and just checked and see if the electrical wiring was all done right, because like the speaker area seems to be the light switch in the wall. It's real focused right there. So
what do you think about all of that?
Grounding. We gotta get things grounded.
You think that an electrician could resolve this?
I would expect so. Or if you really wanted to be crazy serious about it, you could create a Faraday cage around the house, which at that frequency, it's 1160, so it's like 500 and some
Bill,
feet long. Okay,
stop
so
it.
Anyway, it's running.
I couldn't agree more.
It's running wires. It's running wires up the side of your house.
Yeah, really? I got a Faraday shield, and I tried that. So, like, really? I've done a lot of research.
You're kind of an expert on this. Yeah.
Well, I just had remembered something about from my military experience, remembering that when you want to block a signal, there's something called a Faraday shield. So we Googled it, and we were able to order one from Amazon and had it delivered to the house. It did absolutely nothing.
Yeah. But I'm still mystified, guys, because I don't know anything about any of this stuff, but it seems to me like a speaker in a phone or in a stereo or radio, whatever, it's a speaker, and the music comes in via the signal, and then the speaker makes the sound come out. If you don't have all of that, how does a wall or a light switch become a speaker? How does that happen, Bill?
It's a capacitance thing.
Okay, but tell me if this is it, because I think this, tell me if this makes sense.
Yeah.
But that signal is traveling over the airwaves, and it's traveling through you and me.
Sure.
And it travels into these metal things, and it makes them vibrate, right? Because isn't that what a speaker does? Like that?
Because like at our transmitter site, you can hear the coils talk.
Okay, but so
you know, when you open, but there, you know, we've got all the power right there in the tuning houses.
So now the metal wires or conduit or something
they vibrate
at a certain frequency, and now the sound is coming out of there rather than, say, the drum in the speaker in my car.
Correct.
Or something like that. But it's weird because you don't have a tuner.
No.
You don't have an apparatus. You've just got...
there's enough signal to make it move around. That's what's happening.
Huh?
So...
Rich,
you're hitting the point is that no one can really identify exactly, I know how to fix that.
Well,
happening.
Back to your Faraday cage thing again. To do it right, it's a significant amount of work.
And
so,
okay, but so far he's had no luck with that. But
it probably wasn't done all the way, because you can reduce it, you know, by 80, 90 dB, and you'll never hear it.
So it'd be happening, but it wouldn't be audible.
Yeah,
but
no way.
But what about this grounding stuff that Bill's talking about, Richard? Have you guys had an electrician screw screws and make sure everything is wired right?
Yes. So that's exactly my assessment. Is that it is an electrician that mm-hmm. would. Need to be in the mix with an engineer to come up with a problem. So I believe he's 100% right in saying it's a grounding issue. What I've had done is just an electrician to verify from my builder that all of the, you know, the grounding was done properly, and that everything is, you know, that the house is only 10 years old, so the wires aren't corroded or anything like that. And they, you know, the electrician that came out said, you know, everything looks fine to me, so I really don't have an answer for you.
But you'd also have to ground things you wouldn't even expect you'd have to ground, like your aluminum gutters. and things like that, because those could act as antennas too.
Hmm.
So any metal that you've got.
It's a lovely house from what I've seen on TV, by the way, and only 10 years old, and it's still happening. Is that correct, Richard?
It is, yeah. It seems to be a little more frequent in these months when it's winter.
Correct.
And a little less
AM
in the summer.
AM signals travel better in the winter.
And also, that site, I don't think they use that site during the day. I think they just use that site at night.
Any way we could get WGN Radio to come through his walls instead of the other station?
He'd have to move to Elk Grove Village.
Okay. Where our transmitter is.
Where our transmitter is, yeah.
I'll put it this way. I don't really want anything coming through.
I know.
All the way to 6 in the morning.
How close are you how close are you to the towers?
Yeah, so if you looked at that news spot last night on the TV, they it was very, very brief, but you see a great shot of they took a video of our house, mm-hmm. and then right behind that you can see the six towers like rising above the houses in the complex. And mm-hmm. so they're less than a quarter mile away, and they're right there. So that's certainly the power of those signals is what's bringing it through.
And they also have a highly directional array. So with that, the signal may be coming
hello.
At you.
How are you?
So that's why the signal's stronger.
Yeah.
So
I'm sorry we can't solve this. It's fascinating to hear about this, and a lot of our listeners have experienced similar things with our station and other stations. Bob on line 2 says his son's remote control car used to talk to him because of a radio station. Somebody else told us earlier today a household appliance, a stationary cycle. It's amazing.
Well, where we're really bad were turntables. Turntables and magnetic tape machines. So like cassette decks or reel-to-reels, because it's so sensitive.
All right, I'm out of time. So, this is fascinating and tragic.
But wait, I can talk to him, can talk to him off the air. And
hold the line for just another minute, Richard. Maybe Bill will come out and talk some of that fancy engineering talk with you. You seem to speak that language. Our best to you, my friend.
Thank you.
Yeah, good luck. Thanks for the time. Thanks, Bill. It's nice of you to volunteer that. I'm smiling because it's time for the bright side. Okay, the phone lines have been cleared of people doing fancy electronic talk. We now want you to just simply call or text. Lauren Lapka, you will read the text messages. Am I right about that?
You are correct.
And I'll take your phone calls. Elif will answer the phone. 312-981-7200. Call or text right now. We're about to do the bright side, and the lines are open. I want to hear from you. As if that coronavirus isn't scary enough, researchers have discovered that hackers are now sending spam email disguised as legitimate information about coronavirus. What they do is they infect your smartphone or your computer with malicious software. You get an email and it says, open this attachment, important information about coronavirus. You do. And now they're harvesting your personal information. They're damaging your computer. It's important to understand how cybercrime in so many ways affects your life every single day. Somebody's identity is stolen every, 2 seconds? And you're missing stuff if you're just monitoring your credit. And how are you doing that? LifeLock detects a wide range of identity threats. And if there's a problem, they work to fix it. No one can identify all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses. LifeLock can see threats, though, that you might miss on your own. Now, their website is LifeLock.com. Go there or call 1-800-LifeLock, and you can save 25% when you use the promo code LifeLock. So call 1-800-LifeLock or head to LifeLock.com. Use the promo code LifeLock for 25% off. It's time for the bright side. We start with the song. We'll ask you to whistle.
Some things in life are bad.
Goes like this.
They can really make you mad.
Open phone lines.
Other things just make you swear and curse.
312-981.
When you're chewing on life's gristle.
7200.
Grumble.
You know the drill. Call or text right now. Here we go.
And this'll help things turn out for the best.
I'm licking my lips.
And always look on the bright side of life.
Kind of miss Kevin doing that, don't you?
I do. He's very good at it.
He was getting better. Now he's out of the game. My bright side is, by the way, that every day we're picking up more than a minute of daylight. The sun is shining, and if you noticed, it's now after 5:30 before it starts to get dark. I'll take every one of those extra days of daylight I can get.
That's the thing.
Jen DeSalvo in the newsroom. What's your bright side?
Last week.
Say it again.
Oh, yeah. Wasn't there. I had surgery last week, and I think I'm recovering pretty well from it. I'm here, right?
You look great. You sound great. I didn't know. I hope you're well.
Thank you. On the road to recovery. For
life is quite absurd. All right, Lapka, you got one for us?
Sure do. A high of 50-something on Sunday. That's a real bright side for me. Forget
about your seat. Hey, Chuck, you're on WGN. What's your bright side? Why'd you call? You're on the air. Hi.
Hi, John. Thanks for taking my call. A year ago, I adopted a pup who had separation anxieties, and thanks to Steve Dale and the suggestion of a collar similar to a flea collar.
Right.
She's now my best friend.
Always look. I'm happy, Chuck. Thanks for the call, and good luck to you and your dog. And Pam, why are you smiling? You're on WGN.
I'm smiling because I'm going to have my first grandson in May.
Wow. Congrats. Do we know, boy? You said grandson, did you?
Grandson, yep.
Do we have a name picked out yet?
Actually, yes. His name is going to be Rex.
Rex?
Yep, baby T-Rex.
Pam, thanks for the call. Congrats. What are you reading, Lauren Lapka?
Got a few for you. 763 says their youngest daughter has finally got engaged so that mom can relax now. And 630 says their bright side is my house walls aren't playing a radio station through them.
This is, I'm not sure what the name on line four is, Elif. Do we just say daughter? It says daughter. So you'll get to that. Okay, I'll put that on hold. And we will go to Don. You're on WGN. Don, what's your bright side?
Hello, King John. How you doing today?
Hey, good. What's your bright side, sir?
My bright side is I've been on the road for work all week, and in about 2 hours, I will finally be back home with my beautiful bride.
How's life in Gardner, Dwight, and South Wilmington these days?
Life is very good. On Monday night, I'm announcing the basketball regional, boys regional tournament in Coal City this coming week, and the week after, I'm announcing the regional up in Plano.
Don's a pretty good radio man, and I'm loving March Madness. It's right around the corner, and you'll be doing a lot of games, won't you?
Doing a whole bunch of games. March Madness started in Illinois, and we do it better than anybody.
Have a great day, Don. Thanks for the call. We go from you to Kate. You're on WGN. Why are you smiling, Kate? You're on the air.
Well, I have to say my daughter got married to her love of her life on February 11th at the courthouse. Saved me thousands and thousands of dollars, and I'm just ecstatic. I'm happy for them, and life's good.
Sometimes you see courthouse wedding and you think, oh, well, maybe that's not what everybody had in mind, but they're getting married at the courthouse. She couldn't be happier. I'm glad. Thanks for the call, Kate. 312-981-7200. What else are you reading, Lauren Lapka?
A few quick ones for you. 630, Girls Weekend up north in the cabin. Fun. 309 says that yesterday was their birthday and they start a new job on Monday. And 773 says they're celebrating their 39th wedding anniversary today in Walt Disney World. Awesome.
There's two kinds of people in the world. Those that love going to Disney World and those who don't love going to Disney World.
So true. Always look
on the bright side of life. Okay, we got to take a break. We'll do this again next week. It's what we do on Fridays. We ask you to call in, tell us some good news in your world while you are smiling. Producer Olive said don't. We can still got time. Okay, play the music. So we can take line one. Is that what you're saying, Olive? 312-981-7200. So, okay, we won't clear the lines. And the lines are still ringing. You can call or text 312-981-7200. That's right. We're going to Lynn. You're on WGN. What's your bright side, Lynn? You're on the air.
Hi, Jeff. My bright side is my son and I are leaving a week from tomorrow for the beautiful, warm climate of Arizona.
You're leaving next week, are you?
We are, and we're going to hike some.
Where are you going?
Arizona.
Oh, you're going to do some hike some when you get there.
Yes, sir. And maybe catch a spring training Cubs game.
Yeah, or by the way, there's this team on the south side. When you're feeling in the dumps. Have a great trip, Lynn. We've gone to Arizona many times, and hiking through the mountains there is really, really fun. Bring your sunblock. Steve, you're on WGN. Why are you smiling, Steve?
John, I'm going to spring training, leaving tomorrow morning. I'm 71, first time to Cubs spring training.
I want to sound like you when I'm 71. You sound great, sir.
Hey, One other thing. I'm 71. I'm going to take my glove. I'm shooting for a walk-in because I look at who's running for president, their ages. Hey, 70's the new 30. I'm up for it.
Trump, mid-70s, if he wins another term, late 70s. And Bernie, Joe are in their mid-70s. And Bloomberg would all be 75-year-old, 77-year-old president.
Always look on the light side of life.
Hey, Vicky, you're on WGN. Why are you smiling, Vicky? You're on the air.
Hi, John. Tomorrow I'm leaving for Arizona with my best friend since third grade, and we're both 55.
Have a great time. Have a great trip. Thank you for the call. I'm going from you to Jim. You're on WGN. Why are you smiling, Jim?
Hi, Don. I'm going to be a great-great-grandpa in May.
Wow. I got to do the math on that. That's pretty impressive, sir.
Thank you. Thank you.
Have a great weekend. Side of life. Any last ones you want to read, Lauren Lapkin?
Sure, I got one last good one. 563 says their bright side is they adopted a puppy from a shelter yesterday. Her name is Luna. She's already doing awesome. We love her so much.
I love dog names and cat names. Some of them are so fun.
My sister's dog's name is Luna.
Are you kidding?
No,
I don't
not
know
at
that
all.
That's a common name.
Mm-hmm.
Gee, do you have a pet? Gee, Suki is just down the hall. Do you have a cat or dog? Hold on, they're not preset, or if I need to hit button A.
She has a cat. She says she's Sassy. I don't think that's her name, though.
I can't hear her, though. Are you there, Jisuki? Yeah, she's not coming through. Maybe while Bill Murdoch is working on the walls of the home of that guy on Lockport, he should be working on the fact that we can't hear G down the hall. All right, hold on. Now she's ready.
Hi, John. Can you hear me now? I'm so sorry.
You're on the air now. How are you?
I'm fantastic. Yes, I do have a very gorgeous, sassy, smart cat named Sasha, and she only gives me love when she wants to give me love.
Did you hear that conversation we had with the guy that produced the Nova stuff on that?
I was so incredibly grateful that you had him on the show because I just watched the series. Loved it. You are on the pulse, sir.
The stuff they said about cats I thought was fascinating.
Oh, and especially about how so many of the cats, the orange cat was because of the breeding program in Egypt, because they would sacrifice the cats to the god, the cat god or something.
Descendant from that. What are you doing on your show today?
Well, you know, we want to keep things on the bright side. Love that, by the way. Could listen to that all day.
Thank you.
Did you know that around 6 in 10 adults identify work as a significant source of stress? So we're going to tell you how to reduce some of that stress at work and what your bosses can do to help you.